And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West, the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is August the 5th, the 217th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. Leap year, it's 218th day. 148 days remain until the end of the year. About 4 months, don't you know? And a lot of folks will be glad when this year ends. Well, in the year 25, Guangwu claimed the throne as Chinese emperor. This restored the Han Dynasty after the collapse of the short-lived Qing Dynasty. In 135, Roman armies entered Batar. Slaughtered thousands and ended the Bar Kaaba revolt. 642, the Battle of Maserfield. Penda of Mercia defeats and kills Oswald of Northumbria. Year 910, the last major Danish army to raid England for nearly a century is defeated at the Battle of Tettenhall. They were defeated by the Allied forces of Mercia and Wessex, led by King Edward the Elder and Athelred, Lord of the Mercians. 939, the Battle of Alhandic is fought between Ramiro II of Leon and Ad-ar-Rahman III at Zamora in the context of the Spanish Reconquista. The battle resulted in a victory for the Emirate of Cordoba. See, the Moors had taken over Spain, and there was a lot of fighting to try to expel them. 1068, Byzantine-Norman Wars. Italo-Normans begin a three-year siege of Bari. 1100, Henry I is crowned King of England in Westminster Abbey. 1278, in the Spanish Reconquista, forces of the Kingdom of Castile initiate the ultimately futile siege of Algeciras against the Emirate of Granada. 1305, William Wallace, who led the Scottish resistance against England, is captured by the English near Glasgow and transported to London, where he's put on trial and executed. They didn't mess around in those days. 1388, Battle of Otterburn. Border skirmish between the Scottish and the English in northern England is fought near Otterburn. 1506, the Grand Duchy of Lithuania defeats the Crimean Khanate in the Battle of Kletsk. 1583, Sir Humphrey Gilbert establishes the first English colony in North America, and what's now St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador. 1600, the Gowrie Conspiracy against King James VI of Scotland takes place. King James VI of Scotland later became King James I of England. 1620, the Mayflower, partially funded by the Tibbs, who were my ancestors, departs from Southampton, England, carrying would-be settlers on its first attempt to reach North America. It's forced to dock in Dartmouth, and when its companion ship, the Speedwell, springs a leak. 1689, the Beaver Wars. 1500 Iroquois attack Lachine in New France. 1716, Austro-Turkish War. 1/5 of a Turkish army and the Grand Vizier are killed in the Battle of Petrovaradin. 1735, New York Weekly Journal writer John Peter Zinger is acquitted of seditious libel against the royal governor of New York on the basis of what he had published was true. And that is a defense to a charge of slander and libel. 1763, Pontiac's War, Battle of Bushy Run. British forces led by Henry Bouquet defeat Chief Pontiac's Indians at Bushy Run. 1781, the Battle of Dogger Bank takes place. 1796, the Battle of Castiglione in Napoleon's first Italian campaigns of the French Revolutionary War. 1816, the British Admiralty dismisses Francis Ronald's new invention of the first working electric telegraph is wholly unnecessary. They prefer to continue using the semaphore, which didn't work too well during periods of fog, or rain, or dark. But other than that, it worked beautifully. 1824, Greek War of Independence. Constantine Canaris leads a Greek fleet to victory against Ottoman and Egyptian naval forces in the Battle of Samos. 1858, Cyrus Westfield and others complete the first transatlantic telegraph cable after several unsuccessful attempts. It's going to operate for less than a month. 1860, Charles XV of Sweden, Norway, is crowned King of Norway in Trondheim. 1861, American Civil War. In order to help pay for the war effort, the U.S. government levies the first income tax as part of the Revenue Act of 1861. That's 3% of all incomes over $800. It rescinded that in 1872, but a whole lot of people thought to themselves, my God, think of how much money we could bring in if we had a tax. 1861, the U.S. Army abolishes flogging, and things went to hell in discipline after that. 1862, American Civil War, the Battle of Baton Rouge. Along the Mississippi River, New Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Confederate troops attempt to take the city, but they're driven back by fire from Union gunboats. 1864, Battle of Mobile Bay begins at Mobile Bay near Mobile, Alabama. Admiral David Farragut leads a Union flotilla through Confederate defenses and seals one of the last major southern ports. 1874, Japan launches its first postal savings system, modeled after a similar system in the United Kingdom. 1884, the cornerstone for the Statue of Liberty is laid on Bedloe's Island, which is now Liberty Island in the in New York Harbor. 1888, Bertha Benz drives from Mannheim to Forchheim and back in the first long-distance automobile trip. That's commemorated as the Bertha Benz Memorial Route since 2008. 1901, Peter O'Connor sets the first IAAF-recognized long jump record of 11.75 inches, a record that would stand for 20 years. 1906, Persian Constitutional Revolution, Azafar ad-Din Shah Qajar, King of Iran, agrees to convert the government to a constitutional monarchy. 1914, World War I. The German mine layer SS König Luis lays a minefield about 40 miles off the Thames estuary, intercepted and sunk by the British light cruiser HMS Amphion. Also in 1914, the guns at Point Nepean Fort at Port Phillip Heads in Victoria, Australia, fire across the bows of the Norddeutsche Lloyd steamer SS Faltz, which is attempting to leave the port of Melbourne in ignorance of the declaration of war, and she's detained. This was said to be the first Allied shot fired in World War I. Also in 1914, in Cleveland, Ohio, the first electric traffic lights installed. The next day, the first ticket was issued for running a traffic light. 1916, Battle of Romani. Allied forces under the command of Archibald Murray defeat an attacking Ottoman army under the command of Frederick Freiherr Chris von Kressenstein, securing the Suez Canal and beginning the Ottoman retreat from the Sinai Peninsula. 1925, Plaid Cymru is formed with the aid of disseminating knowledge of the Welsh language that it is at the time in danger of dying out. 1926, Harry Houdini performs his greatest feat, spending 91 minutes underwater in a sealed tank before he escaped. 1940, World War II. Soviet Union formally annexes Latvia. 1944, at least 1,104 Japanese POWs in Australia attempt to escape from a camp at Kora, New South Wales. 545 temporarily succeed, but are later either killed, commit suicide, or are recaptured. 1944, Polish insurgents liberate a German labor camp in Warsaw. freed 348 Jewish prisoners. Also in 1944, the Nazis began a week-long massacre between 40 and 50,000 civilians and prisoners of war in Wola, Poland. 1949 in Ecuador, an earthquake destroys 50 towns and kills more than 6,000 people. 1957, American Bandstand, a show dedicated to the teenage baby boomers by playing the songs and showing popular dances at the time, debuts on ABC TV. 1960, Burkina Faso, then known as Upper Volta, becomes independent from France. 1962, apartheid. Nelson Mandela is jailed. He wouldn't be released till 1990. 1962, American actress Marilyn Monroe is found dead at her home from what was thought to be a drug overdose. There are many who believe that she was murdered because she knew too much about what was going on with the Kennedys. 1963, Cold War. The U.S., the U.K., and the Soviet Union signed the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. 1964, Operation Pierce Arrow. American aircraft from carriers USS Ticonderoga and USS Constellation bombed North Vietnam in retaliation for strikes against U.S. destroyers in the Gulf of Tonkin. Of course, now we have questions about whether those strikes actually ever took place. 1965, Indo-Pakistani War of 1965 begins as Pakistani soldiers cross the line of control dressed as locals. 1971, the First Pacific Islands Forum, then known as the South Pacific Forum, is held in Wellington, New Zealand with the aim of enhancing cooperation between independent countries of the Pacific Ocean. 1973, Mars 6 is launched from the USSR. 1974, the U.S. Congress puts a $1 billion limit on military aid to South Vietnam. 1979, in Afghanistan, Maoists undertake the Bandar Hissar Uprising against the Leninist government. 1981, Ronald Reagan fires 11,359 striking air traffic controllers who ignored his order to return to work. 1984, a Biman Bangladesh airline Fokker F-27 Friendship crashes on approach to Zia International Airport in Dhaka, Bangladesh, killing all 49 people on board. 1995, Yugoslav Wars. The city of Knin in Croatia, a significant Serb stronghold, captured by Croatian forces during Operation Storm. A date celebrated in Croatia is Victory Day. 2003, car bomb explodes in Indonesian capital of Jakarta outside the Marriott Hotel. 12 are killed and 150 are injured. 2010, the Capayapo mining accident occurs. 33 Chilean miners are trapped approximately 2,300 feet below ground for 69 days. 2010, and they didn't get paid overtime. Members of International Assistance Mission Nuristan I Camp team are killed by persons unknown in Karan Wamunhan district of Badakhshan province in Afghanistan. 2012, the Wisconsin Sikh temple shooting takes place at Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Six are killed. The perpetrator committed suicide after being wounded by police. 2015, the Environmental Protection Agency at Gold King Mine wastewater spill releases 3 million gallons of heavy metal toxin tailings and wastewater into the Animas River in Colorado. When asked why, later they said, it happened. 2019, revocation of the special status of Jammu and Kashmir state occurred, and the state was bifurcated into two union territories, Jammu and Kashmir and Ladakh. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays, Christian Feast Day, Abel of Realms, Adai, Afra, Albrecht Dürer, Matthias Grunewald, Lucas Cranach the Elder in the Episcopal Church, Cassian of Autun, dedication of the Basilica of St. Mary Major in the Catholic Church, Immigdius, Memnius, Oswald of Northumbria, Independence Day in Burkina Faso, Victory in Homeland Thanksgiving Day, and a Day of Croatian Defenders in Croatia. All right, let's see what else we got for today. All right, the last 1583, Humphrey Gilbert claims Newfoundland for the British crown. This was the beginning of the British Empire. 1716, Battle of Petrovaradin. The Habsburg under Eugene of Savoy defeats the Turk in a decisive victory. Alrighty. . 135, Batar, the last outpost of Bar Kochba, falls to Rome. 642, the Battle of Mansfeld. Pinda of Mercia defeats and kills Oswald of Bernicia. 1264, anti-Jewish riots break out in Arnstadt, Germany. 1391, Castilian sailors fire attack the ghetto of Barcelona. Hundreds are killed. 1435, the Battle of Panza. King Alfonso V of Aragon is captured by Genuzin. 1420, Duke John VI of Bavaria visits Dutch mystic Lidwina, Christ's bride. 1543, French and Turkish troops occupy Nice. 1654, French troops occupy Stenay. 1745, the Jacobite Rising of 1745. Jacobite forces capture British company troops under Captain Scott. He probably didn't make major. 1772, the first partition of Poland between Austria, Prussia, and Russia is made public. 1775, the first Spanish ship, the San Carlos, enters San Francisco Bay. 1781, the Battle of Dogger Bank. A British strategic victory, though both sides. This was the Fourth Anglo-Dutch War. Both sides claimed to have won this battle. War of 1812, Tecumseh's Native American force ambushes Thomas Van Horn's 200 Americans at Brownstone Creek. They cut and ran. 1846, Oregon Territory divided between U.S. and Britain at the 49th parallel. 1861, Union enlistment increases from 3 months to 2 years. Originally, if you enlisted in the Union Army at the beginning of the Civil War, you were there for 90 days. You could go home. 1861, naval engagement at Fernandina, Florida. I've been there. Nice fort. USS Vincennes ends the rebel blockade. 1862. The Battle of Mobile Bay that I mentioned earlier is where David Farragut made the statement, "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead." 1864, the spectrum of a comet was observed for the first time by Giovanni Donati. 1882, martial laws imposed in Japan. 1882, Standard Oil of New Jersey is established. 1890, Britain and France agreed to divide African colonization. 1891, world's first traveler's checks are issued by American Express. 1912, Japan's first taxicab service begins in Ginza, Tokyo. 1914, Cuba, Uruguay, Mexico, and Argentina proclaimed their neutrality in World War I. 1914 is the Battle of Liege. It's the first battle, major battle of World War I. Massive German assault on forts around the Belgian city of Liege, led by Erich Ludendorff. 1918, World War I, the last German air raid on England occurs. Four Zeppelins drop bombs in the Midlands in northeast England. The Zeppelin was invented by Count Ferdinand von Zeppelin, don't you know? And finally, 1924, Little Orphan Annie comic strip by Harold Gray is first published in the New York Daily News. And she hasn't aged a day since that time. 1932, Clyde Barrow and two associates kill Sheriff C.G. Maxwell and his deputy, Eugene Moore. This is the first time the Barrow gang killed a lawman. And on that note, we're going to turn to our more strange crimes. Now, sometimes teachers react very oddly. In 2013, Kara Wilmot, a 16-year-old Florida high school student, was working on a science fair project before class one morning. She combined a few pieces of aluminum foil and some toilet cleaner in a bottle of water. And the result was a loud pop, not unlike that of a firecracker. No damage, nobody was injured, nothing to see. But several students and teachers heard the explosion. Well, such is the mentality of teachers who were raised by maiden aunts that she was arrested and charged with domestic terrorism for detonating a bomb on school property. She was suspended for 10 days and reassigned to a charter school. Well, Kira, who was a bookish cello player, said she wanted to build robots when she grew up and insisted she was just doing an experiment. An online Justice for Kira petition sprang up, calling on authorities to drop all charges, and it got over 200,000 signatures. So the Looney Tune teacher, who was behind her expulsion, decided it was better to bite your tongue. Criminal charges were dropped. That's not all that happened. News of that suspension reached Homer Hickam. He trains astronauts for NASA. Turns out when he was a high school student in the 80s, he and his friends launched some homemade rockets, one of which started a small forest fire. Well, his high school principal and physics teacher both intervened with the police on his behalf, and he was cleared of the charges, free to pursue a life of science. Unlike her principal and teachers, who said, "Lock her up." So when Hickam heard about Kara, he presented her and her twin sister Kayla with a scholarship to attend space camp. Kara later said she was really excited, especially the zero gravity tank. "I always wanted to do that," she said. Well, how about a story about suing for a tattooing? Plaintiff was David Jonathan Winkleman and his stepson, Richard Goddard. They were suing KORB, an Indiana hard rock radio station. Well, in 2000, a DJ by the name of Ben Stone announced on the air any listener who had the station's call letters tattooed on their foreheads would get $150,000. Well, Winkleman and Goddard decided to take him up on the offer. But being cautious, they called the station and asked if the deal was legitimate. And they were told it was, so they went to a tattoo parlor and got their foreheads inked with the station's slogan, 93 Rock the Quad City Rocker. When the two men went to the station to get their prize, Stone photographed them and then said it was just a practical joke. So they didn't get any money, but their pictures were displayed on the station's website. Winkleman lost his job, and neither man could find work because of these big tattoos on their foreheads. So, finding some enterprising attorney, they sued the radio station, claiming the radio station set out to publicly scorn and ridicule them for their greed and lack of common sense. Well, Goddard's case was dismissed when he didn't show up at court. Winkleman later dropped his suit. Radio stations changed its format from hard rock to easy listening. Nobody said why Winkleman dropped his suit or why Goddard didn't show up. I mean, had I gone through all that, I would certainly have shown up. Well, we've all heard about ruthless kingpins, but let's talk about ruthless queenpins. In 2000, police arrested Erminia Giuliano, a mob leader in Camorra, Naples. Police claim she had ruthlessly and casually ordered numerous executions and was ranked as one of Italy's 30th most dangerous criminals. Well, when she got arrested, she had a special request for the police. She wanted to go to the hairdresser and wear a leopard skin outfit to prison. Well, Erminia Giuliano's rival in Naples was Maria Licciardi, who took over her family after her husband's arrest. And she built the family's business by forging alliances with other Camorra clans and by adding prostitution to heroin trade and extortion. Well, the alliances eventually crumbled. Between 1997 and 98, she dragged her family through gang wars that killed more than 100 people. And in 2001, she got arrested. Well, in 2002, there was an argument in a Naples hair salon between Clarissa Cava and Alba Graziano. See, the Cavas and the Grazianos were rivals for 30 years. Several days later, Graziano and her daughters, who were 21 and 22, drove up to the car occupied by the 21-year-old Cava, her two aunts, and her sister, and machine-gunned them to death. The Grazianos were later heard laughing and toasting the killings on police surveillance tapes. That does show several things, one of which is underestimating the police, and number two, a little bit of cold-bloodedness. Well, in April of 2006, somebody reported to Kentucky Fish and Wildlife officers they found something odd at Lake Barkley in Kentucky. They found a basket containing five live bass tied to a dock just below the waterline. Well, this aroused the suspicion of the officers who knew that a fishing tournament was scheduled at the lake that weekend. So they marked the fish's fins and watched the site. Apparently, they thought there was something fishy going on. Sure enough, on Saturday morning, a boat pulled up, retrieved the stashed fish, and left. The boat belonged to two Kentuckians, Dwayne Nesmith, 43, and Brian Thomas, 31, who were registered in the tournament. Well, the officers posed as staff members and were at the weigh-in when Nesmith and Thomas dropped off the marked fish. Well, they didn't win any money. They were ounces shy of earning prize money, so when the officers identified themselves, the two could only be charged with misdemeanors. But an investigation revealed that Nesmith and Thomas had entered other tournaments as well and had been uncannily lucky in them. They had won thousands of dollars in prizes, even winning a $30,000 boat. Well, the fishy fishing buddies were arrested and charged with 10 felony counts of theft. Of course, how they could be proven after the fact was anybody's guess. Well, Mr. Mudgett, or Henry Holmes, his alias at the time, operated in Chicago at the time of the 1892 Columbian Exposition. Mudgett killed women in a Baroque chamber of horrors he had secretly built into his mansion. Others called it a hotel, located on 63rd Street. And he lured them there by offering them jobs. Over the course of 2 years, Mudgett had something on the order of 100 secretaries. And you'd think somebody would notice the revolving door of secretaries, but apparently nobody did. But this was 1892, and the sort of woman who had to work out of the home was also the sort of woman less likely to be missed. So Mudgett went out of his way to employ new arrivals to town, who had the added benefit of nobody being around to look for him. Well, he wasn't just a crazed wacko who liked killing people. He was a crazed wacko who liked killing people and taking their money. Before he offed his victims, he had gained their trust and convinced them to give him their life savings. His rationale was that once he'd killed them, they wouldn't need the money anyway. Well, Mudgett had seriously screwed up, unfortunately. Abusive parents, early episodes of animal mutilation, all the classic signs of being a little sandwich short of a picnic, I guess we should say. Mudgett used his medical expertise to perform horrifying experiments on his victims. And after he had his fun, he disposed of the evidence in a special cremation oven he had put in the basement. Or if he chose to sell the bones to a local medical school, as he did from time to time, there was always the lime pit where he could put the body. Well, nobody knows for sure how many people Mudgett actually killed. Estimates go up into the hundreds. Beyond the secretary pool, Mudgett also killed guests at his hotel. His cover was the Columbian Exposition, a huge World's Fair taking place only a few blocks away, and it attracted a vast number of folks from faraway places. So they wouldn't be missed, at least not anybody local who might be able to put two and two together and get something other than five. Mudgett's downfall came in the form of Benjamin Petzl, whom a penny-pinching Mudgett decided to kill for insurance purposes. Well, wouldn't you know, the insurance company had suspicions something was odd, as did Petzl's wife. Well, Mudgett's response was to also murder three of Petzl's kids before the cops got him in Boston. At that point, they started working backward and found Mudgett's hotel, which is now a smoking ruin. That was another insurance scam, don't you know? And they found evidence of his terrifying serial murders. So he was tried, convicted, and hung. And on the gallows, his last words were he'd really only killed two women. He didn't know what everybody's upset about. Well, we talked about the Night Stalker earlier. Well, about 8:30 on a sweltering Saturday night in 1985, L.A. County Sheriff's Deputy Andy Ramirez arrived at what looked like a typical street fight. Six men had another one pinned down on the sidewalk, beating the crap out of him, and the man on the ground was begging, "Let me go, let me go." Deputy took custody of the injured suspect and asked him his name, and he said, "Ricardo Ramirez." Well, Deputy Ramirez didn't realize that this was the Night Stalker. Well, before he could do anything with his prisoner, an angry mob of dozens of people approached him, and they knew who that Ricardo Ramirez was, and they were screaming, "Shoot him, shoot him." Well, Deputy Ramirez later said, well, you could see they were angry. They were getting closer and closer. So the officer put the killer in handcuffs and put him in the back of the squad car. It was only later he realized he had the actual Night Stalker in custody. When Officer Jim Kaiser from the LAPD arrived, Ramirez, the deputy, put Ramirez, the killer, in Kaiser's car and told him to get out of there before a riot broke out. According to Kaiser, the ride to the station was surreal. He said he had cold black eyes, and when they got at the precinct, the Night Stalker threw up green vomit all over the parking lot. Kind of like Linda Blair did in The Exorcist. Kaiser said he was the ultimate manifestation of absolute evil. Ramirez was later convicted of 13 murders and sentenced to death, but before he could be executed, this was California, don't you know? He died of cancer in 2013. Well, even the dumbest criminals have a general idea of what needs to be done. Sam and Paul knew this, that about cash registers. Just like cracking a walnut's heart out of shell, Once you get into the register, it's gravy time. So, in a cash register, you always find green wads of cash and metal disc, which represent change. And this idea is what motivated him to kick in the door of an Austin, Minnesota restaurant, steal the shop's cash register from its moorings, and fled the scene just as they were spotted by a passing cab driver who called the police to report these two guys had stolen the cash register. Well, what the two didn't realize, apparently, is that money's not all the cash register stores. Some models, including the model they stole, also have long rolls of paper used to print out receipts for the customers. So you might ask yourself, how long are these rolls of paper? Well, the lengths vary. But in this particular case, it was just long enough for the police, who had been called to the scene, noticed that the paper had slipped from the register, and they just followed its trail into the bushes where they found Sam and Paul in the cash register, all sitting there together. Sam and Paul were arrested, of course, and cash register was returned. Paper probably had to be thrown away because it's very hard to put it back on the roll. And hopefully the two would get a receipt with their charges. Well, let's talk about killer quotes. This first one was made by Henry Lee Lucas, who was convicted of killing three, though he confessed to having killed 3,000. He said, if you shoot somebody in the head with a 45 every time, it becomes like your fingerprint, see? But if you strangle one and stab another, and one you cut up and one you don't, then the police don't know what to do. They think you're four different people. What they really want, and what makes their job so much easier, is a pattern. They call that a modus operandi. That's Latin, don't you know? Clearly, we were dealing with an intellectual here. Well, Ted Bundy said, the fantasy that accompanies and generates the anticipation that precedes the crime is always more stimulating than the immediate aftermath of the crime itself. Bundy had a college education. Jeffrey Dahmer and Bundy's supposed to have killed over 36, who is known to have killed seven. He said, if I knew the true, real reason why all this started before it ever did, I wouldn't probably have done any of it. Another intellectual, don't you know? Well, Charles Manson, who was supposed to have killed nine, said, have you ever seen the coyote in the desert? Watching, tuned in, completely aware. Hears every sound, smells every smell, sees it. Everything that moves. He's in a state of total paranoia. And total paranoia is total awareness. Let's talk about Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, who killed over 16. He said, we've all got the power in our hands to kill, but most people are afraid to use it. And the ones who aren't afraid control life itself. He was sentenced to be executed, but died of cancer. Well, you know, role models are people too. And in this particular case, the two role models in question were Art McCoy and Abdul Rahim, heads of a Cleveland, Ohio anti-crime organization. In 1998, they were sentenced to prison for spending $617,597 at the city of Cleveland accidentally deposited in the bank account of their organization. According to news reports, that money landed in their account when a city data operator punched in the wrong wire transfer number while intending to pay a utility bill. Now, according to the two geniuses who got arrested, they thought it was a gift from the city. Where our next role model is Susan John, chairperson of Rochester, New York's Committee on Alcohol and Drug Abuse.
In March of 1997, she pleaded guilty for driving while impaired. That's code words for driving while drunk. Her public statement, this will give me additional insights into the problem of drinking and driving, and I believe will allow me to do my job even more effectively. Yeah. Well, this next story I found amusing. A 280-pound thief broke into a Romanian bakery and stole $250. But he couldn't resist the temptation located around the store. So he tried to exit through a window, but he got stuck. He after stuffing himself full of pies. And the 29-year-old man was still stuck in the window the next morning when the shop owner, Vasily Mandashi, arrived for work. He said, "I saw all the pie wrappers on the floor and a pair of stubby fat legs hanging out the window." He said, "I just had to call my friends to come and have a look before we called the police." It was absolutely hilarious. Police had to use the jaws of life to get him out of the window. Well, let's talk about clergy gone wild. Parishioners at St. Vincent Ferrer's Church in Florida were shocked when auditors reported that $8.7 million are missing from the church's account. And they were even more shocked to learn that Fathers John Skihan and Francis Guinan were skimming donations to buy gambling trips, rare coins, a condo. They even bought a pub in Ireland. Skihan got sentenced to 14 months in prison. Guinan got 4 years. Judge Krista Marks called their crimes unmitigated greed and unmitigated gall. But nobody answered the most important question of all. What happened to the pub? Well, Rabbi Baruch Chalomish told police he'd rented an apartment in Manchester, England, so he could relax and have a party. However, he didn't anticipate his parties caught the attention of the police, who raided the apartment, arrested Chalomish for dealing cocaine and hiring prostitutes. At his trial, Chalomish told the jury he was just a wealthy guy who liked to assist people less fortunate than himself, and he only used cocaine when he couldn't sleep. Of course, he later admitted to spending $1,600 a week on the drug. So he was eventually cleared of distribution charges, but he was found guilty of possession. Must have had a massive case of insomnia. Well, sometimes you have to wonder how people come up with ideas. In 2008, a beach, an entire beach, was stolen in Jamaica. Over 500 truckloads of pristine white sand was carted off. To where? Nobody ever knew. The thieves were never apprehended or even identified. Well, Reverend John Cameroon Urbelli of Burnsville, Minnesota, according to the Missoula Independent newspaper, looks nothing like a traditional pastor. But his flock adored him, which is why they were crushed when he was one of 16 men lured to a hotel room to pay for sex in a 2009 police sting. So he barely pleaded guilty and was sentenced to probation and sent to John's School. That's an educational program for men who solicit prostitutes. I guess they show you new positions you're not aware of. Well, in this particular situation, there were actually wanted posters that read, "Cattle and Horse Thief," and listed her alias as an unknown and identified her crime as heading a band of rustlers in Oklahoma. And what she rode didn't have a fringe on top either. Belle Starr's father, John, ran an inn. Her mother, Eliza, was related to the infamous Hatfield family, the Hatfield-McCoy fame. And Starr was born Myra Belle Shirley in Carthage, Missouri in 1848. Now, the Shirleys were Confederate sympathizers, and one of their sons was actually killed during the Civil War. And Belle aided the Confederacy during the war as well. Even though a teenager, she spied on Union troops. It was during this time that she made her first criminal connection. She met outlaw Cole Younger, his brothers, and Jesse and Frank James. Well, the Shirley family moved to Texas while Belle married farmer Jim Reed. And the couple had two children, Pearl, who many people believe was actually the daughter of Cole Younger, and Ed. Now, there wasn't a whole lot of money in farming, so Jim Reed began working with the Youngers, the James brothers, and the cattle and horse-thieving Cherokee clan called the Stars. And over the next 3 years, Jim Reed robbed stagecoaches, killed at least one person, and went on a run with his family. Now, the police suspected Belle was in on the crimes. She started gambling in saloons, wearing a Stetson, and carrying pistols, but there was never any direct evidence she helped her husband do anything. And when Jim was killed by a sheriff's deputy, Belle sent the kids to lure the relatives and took his place in the Star Clan. Well, in 1880, Belle married Sam Starr. And by most accounts, she became the brains behind the family's criminal horse thievery and cattle rustling. Where both Belle and Sam were soon caught and charged with horse theft, cattle rustling, and various other crimes. And they ended up in front of Texas's notorious hanging judge, Isaac Parker, who sentenced them to 1 year in prison. Now, there is a story that Judge Parker was actually guilty of theft himself, but that's a whole other story. Well, the time in jail didn't halt Belle's criminal activities. She continued to be part of the Starr family business even after Sam was killed in a gunfight in 1886. Her next husband and her teenage son were also indicted for stealing horses during the 1880s. Finally, in February of 1889, her outlaw life caught up with her. She was riding home from a shopping trip, and a shotgun blast in the woods threw her out of her saddle. Her spooked horse raced back to the Starr house, alerting Belle's daughter Pearl, who went looking for her mother. But unfortunately, it was too late. Belle was dead just 2 days before her 41st birthday. Her killer was never caught. And the list of suspects was so long that nobody even bothered to try to figure out who it was. Well, I'm sure you've heard the reference to Machiavellian ideas. And they've landed people in prison or power, including Machiavelli himself. Niccolo Machiavelli lived during a time of great plotting and political upheaval in Italy. Initially, he aligned himself with a government that expelled the ruthless and powerful Medici family who had ruled Florence for 60 years. When that government fell apart and the Medicis came back with a vengeance, Machiavelli was tossed into prison and tortured. Behind bars, he wrote The Prince, a philosophical treatise on politics that leaders should rule by force instead of by law. In The Prince, Machiavelli wrote, "Anyone compelled to choose will find greater security in being feared than in being loved." And it was from this book that the term Machiavellian came into use to describe a ruthless, deceitful, cunning leader. Reportedly, Soviet dictator Joe Stalin was a fan of The Prince and kept a copy beside his bed. And he certainly became ruthless, deceitful, and cunning. We've got a bunch of folks in Congress right now who think they're ruthless, deceitful, and cunning. Well, let's talk about an escape from one of the world's most notorious prisons. Alcatraz, you see, is a 12-acre sandstone island in San Francisco Bay. The city sits just a mile and a half away, but the icy ocean currents between the island and the city are treacherous. In 1934, the U.S. government opened a high-security prison on Alcatraz and started shipping the country's most dangerous criminals there. There were people like Al Capone and Machine Gun Kelly. Officials bragged Alcatraz was escape-proof, and armed guards watched the inmates' every move. Now, some of the prisoners did try to escape. Most died in the attempt, either shot by the guards or drowned in the ocean or eaten by sharks. But there's one famous escape attempt that may or may not have been successful. In 1960, convicted bank robbers Frank Lee Morris and the Anglin brothers started plotting a getaway. Each man had a small vent in his cell, and they used nail clippers and spoons stolen from the dining room to pry loose the grills that covered the vents. Well, the goal was to widen the vents and dig a tunnel to the outside. Then they would squeeze through the vents, escape through the tunnel, and use a makeshift raft to sail across the bay. And each night they crawled through the vents and crept toward the prison's roof, working to pry away the bolts and bend the bars that blocked access to the outside. And they also built a raft out of stolen raincoats and stored it in a corridor below the roof. Well, it took them 2 years, but finally their work was complete. June 11, 1962, Morris and the Anglin squeezed through the bars, dragged their raft across the roof, shimmied 50 feet down a drain pipe to the ground, climbed a 15-foot fence topped with barbed wire, and vanished. Now, most people think the trio died in the bay. Men on a Canadian fishing boat said they saw a body floating face down in the water shortly after the escape. But none of the prisoners were heard from again, even though all three had been notorious. FBI investigators didn't think they'd just stopped committing crimes, so you have to ask yourself what happened after they got in the water. The fate of the three men remains a mystery. Now, here's an interesting fact you may or may not have been aware of. Richard the Night Stalker Ramirez's 1989 murder trial was the most expensive in California history. It cost the taxpayers $1.8 million. 5 years later, O.J. Simpson shattered that record when he paid nearly $5 million for his Dream Team defense. Remember, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. You don't get phrases like that for nickels and dimes. Well, a day after they told their tale of buried treasure on national TV, two men were charged with stealing 1,800 antique dollar bills, estimated to be worth more than $100,000, they said they found in their backyard. As Timothy Cribasi, 24, and Barry Billcliff, 27, recounted their story on Good Morning America Today, Fox, and CNN, police noticed the details changed with each appearance. There were discrepancies about when they found the money, how deep it was buried, and literally every aspect of it. When Cribasi and Billcliff returned from New York media blitz, police and Secret Service are waiting to question them. It turns out they found the bills in a barn they were roofing, and they were charged with receiving stolen property and conspiracy to commit larceny. Men weren't able to raise the $5,000 cash bail because the court wouldn't accept any of the $100,000 that they had found. A suspect in taxicab robberies walked into a New York City police station and failed to notice his picture in a wanted photo on the wall. This gave cops, of course, one of their easiest arrests ever. An alert detective noticed the resemblance and immediately arrested Awi Chucky Hernandez, 20. Hernandez had gone to the station to inquire about a friend who'd been arrested in another investigation. If you're guilty of something, don't walk into the lion's mouth. Well, sometimes life slaps you upside the head. Twice. Ralph Needs, 80, of Gros Point, Ohio, was hospitalized in 2009 when three robbers broke into his house, tied him up, and pistol whipped him. They broke his nose, stole his truck, computer, and credit cards. Now, 4 days later, Needs' son was giving his father a lesson in self-defense when he loaded up a 9mm pistol and accidentally shot his father in the hand. Needs was treated at a nearby and very familiar hospital and released. His son was not charged with the crime. At least he didn't do like the one robber that stuck the pistol in the back of his belt and when he tried to shift it, shot himself in the ass. A San Diego, California Wells Fargo bank was robbed in September 2008. Robber escaped with an undisclosed amount of cash. Well, the same Wells Fargo bank was robbed on the same day, 3 hours later, by another bank robber. The FBI spokesman said the robbers were the Hard Hat Bandit, who was known for wearing a yellow hard hat during his robberies, and the Chatty Bandit, known for talking on his cell phone as he entered the bank he was about to rob. The two were not working together, according to spokesman. Both of the bandits were later arrested and sent to federal prison. Different federal prisons, of course. Now, if you were the second bandit, wouldn't you be annoyed to find out that the place had already been robbed? Well, people are always saying their Mondays are rough. Well, French officials tried to renew guillotine on a live prisoner, a man named Jacques Nicolas Jacques Pelletier, on April 25, 1792. It worked. James Rogers, a Utah murderer, was facing a firing squad in 1960, was asked if he had a final request, and he said, well, why, yes, a bulletproof vest. Well, only one Confederate soldier was executed for war crimes after the Civil War was over. His name was Henry Wirz. He ran Andersonville Military Prison, where nearly a third of the Union prisoners died of malnutrition and disease. In 1890, William Kemmler of Buffalo, New York, became the first person ever executed by the electric chair. And finally, being an axe man could be even worse than being a hangman. Take the anonymous beheader of Mary, Queen of Scots, in 1587. Rather than good, clean head chopping, his first blow glanced off her lower skull and didn't kill her. Second blow did kill her, but her head hung on by a gristle, so he rocked the axe blade back and forth to try to cut it. Well, her head finally detached from the body, and he lifted it up by the hair for the assembled company of nobles, but since she was wearing a wig, her head fell on the floor. I guess that's what's known as a poorly executed plan. Now let's talk about one of the federal government's more mysterious programs called the Federal Witness Protection Program. Any relatives or loved ones of a witness are eligible to enter the program with their potential targets. This includes grandparents, in-laws, girlfriends, boyfriends, even mistresses. When a witness enters WITSEC, as it's called, they get a new name, assistance moving to a new city, and help with rent and other expenses till they find a job. They also get a new birth certificate, social security card, driver's license, but that's about it. Marshal Service doesn't create fake past or phony job histories, doesn't give fake credit histories either. And without a resume or job history, it's not easy finding a job. According to former mobster Joseph Joe Dogs Annunzio, you go get a job, you got no references, they're not going to lie for you. They don't help you get references for an apartment. You have to go and muscle it for yourself. But the Marshal Service does do what it can to help. It's compiled a list of companies whose CEOs have agreed to provide jobs to government witnesses. When a witness is placed with a company, only the CEO or some other high-level corporate officials knows that the employee is a government witness, and even they're not told the person's true identity. But they are, though, given details of the employee's criminal history. According to retired Deputy Marshal Donna McPherson, you go to the head of the corporation, you tell him the crimes, you've got that obligation, you're not going to help a bank robber get a job as a bank teller. Though he would have experience at that, I would have to say. And we're going to talk more about the WITSEC program tomorrow, but for right now, we've come to the end of another show. So until tomorrow night at 6 p.m., this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.